Hi everyone, and welcome to our fourth Spud Smart webinar of 2016. Today we'll be looking at how fall bedding reduces soil compaction, reduces surface water movement, allows you to take advantage of winter's freeze-thaw cycle to crumble clods, and warms up soil faster in the spring. My name is Mark Zinkowitz. I'm an editor with Issues, Inc., the publishers of Spud Smart magazine and spudsmart.com. And today I'll be serving as your moderator. First of all, I'd like to thank our sponsor, McCain Foods, for its support. I'd also like to note a few housekeeping items. This webinar is being recorded and will be made available on spudsmart.com following the event. For audio quality purposes, all microphones have been muted with the exception of speakers. If you have a question or comment, please share them in the chat box on the bottom left side of your screen and let us know who they are directed to. We certainly welcome your input. Also, viewers are welcome to keep tabs on Twitter as well. We will be sending out live tweets during the webinar. Today we have one speaker to talk about fall bedding or ridging in potatoes. Harold Perry, along with his brother Chris, run their farm operation, Perry Produce Limited, near Chin, Alberta. The Perry Farm is a diverse operation comprising 3,500 acres of irrigated land, producing quality potatoes, sunflowers, green peas, seed canola, and a range of cereals for clients like Frito-Lay, McCain's, Bonduelle, High Tech Production, and Spitz. The Perry family implements best practices and uses modern technology to demonstrate responsibility to the planet and people through environmental stewardship. Here's how things are going to go during the webinar. Harold will review the use of fall bedding or ridging on his farm, why he does it, and how it's helped his operation. And he'll also be chatting a bit about how he uses cover crops in conjunction with fall bedding. So let's get started. Over to you, Harold.
Good morning, fellow webinars. I'm Harold Perry, a farmer from Coaldale, and I'm going to be presenting on our experiences with fall ridging. Okay, a little bit of background to us. Mark gave us some background, but I'll put some pictures to that. I farm with my brother and my father and our family, and that's the home farmstead, and that's the potato storage is where we do most of our work. My dad is a third generation farmer. Chris and I are fourth generation farmers. And in the picture, that's our employees for the fall harvest. A little bit of geography here. We're in the Coaldale-Tabor area. Most of our farm is in Chin, some is in Fincastle. And we farm 31 irrigated quarters, and we rotate through 45 irrigated quarters of land. We have storage for 25,000 tons at the domes, and our contract is with McCain's and Frito-Lay. Mark already mentioned, but we also grow for Bonduelle, and we grow some sunflowers, some mixed grains, some seed canola, and we also grow silage corn for a feedlot. And our strategic intent on our farm is ensure the farm is in better health than received for our future generations. That's fiscally, operationally, and soil, with our soil. In 2014, we also got a biogas plant going on our farm that uses our cull potatoes and some dairy manure and other organics. This produced over double what our peak load is for energy. And so our plan is to take our farm off-grid in the future. Okay, I'll move on to the fall ridging. Reasons of fall ridge. Mark said it already, reduce compaction in the growing season, reduce surface water movement, take advantage of winter's freeze-thaw to crumble clods, and warm up soils faster in the spring. Here's some science behind compaction and the reason that we're doing fall ridging. We don't ever want to drive where the hills are, so we drive in between the rows, and that'll reduce the compaction so the potatoes can grow without any compaction, which is good. Looser soils definitely help. We notice higher higher sets and just better nutrient uptake. This is a power hilling on our farm. So as you can see, those are the fall ridges, and the power hiller is coming down there. And on our farm, we're straddling four rows, so we actually have a bed under our tractor. We thought if the tractors can straddle four rows, we might as well make all other equipment do it as well. The reason we power hill is to reduce the clods, and we find when the hills are loose like that, we get a more even seed depth accuracy, because the shoes can actually go through those rows nice and easily. And when we fall bed, we can actually pick up a mile and a half an hour faster with our power hiller. So it's a little bit easier, doesn't have to work as hard. So here's our planting operation. We have 2 8-row Grima planters. They fold up. That's made our planting operation work quite smoothly. We just did that last year. And our planters as well, you can see the 8 rows in the middle of the page have the planter tire tracks also following the tracks of the tractor. So in our operation, we don't have any duals running down between our rows. We just straddle those 4 rows of every operation. We use a hill shaper, and it's a 2x2 fertilizer after planting. It's a 12-row Sputnik, and it works quite well. We put down 1034 with humic acid, sometimes a little bit of micros in there, and we also put down fish fertilizer when our FOS is sufficient. This system works quite well, but we plant 8 and we hill 12, so if our GPS isn't working that well, this can actually move the hills a little bit, and the potatoes don't come up in the middle of the hill, so not ideal, but it has been working quite well this past year. There is equipment out there that can do the power hilling, the planting, and the hilling all in one pass and save tractor power. Okay, the freeze thaw. I think most people on the call knows about the freeze thaw in winter. But if you have enough moisture, I have a picture of a rock there just to demonstrate it. That same thing happens with the lumps over winter, if you have enough moisture in the lump to crumble it down. These are our fall ridges this year. So these were made in about September 29th. We did spread a cover crop on as we were fall ridging, and I'll get to that a little bit later. But this had snow about 6 to 8 inches on this field, and it actually insulated, so we didn't get a freeze thaw on the lumps on top. The freeze thaw works well, but like with every operation in your field, you want to make sure everything's optimal. If you create lumps that are too big, they will still give you grief. If you have a dry winter, you won't get that freeze thaw action. Because water expands, I believe it's about 9%, so if you have water in the lump and it freezes, that's what breaks up your lumps. So healthy tillage practices is always a must. If the soil's too wet, you definitely get bad lumps, and if it's too dry, it doesn't seem to work up very nicely. A lot of times what we will do is we'll go across with a cultivator. We try to work down about 5 inches, and then we'll disc rip it and then come in with our fall ridger. So you make that top, you can make the top 4 to 6 inches nice and loose with a cultivator. That seems to give you a lot of nice dirt to make your hills with afterwards. So the disc ripper and the big one and the other heavy deep tillage implements can sometimes bring up big lumps, which can give you a little bit of trouble. So with your dammer diker or fall bedder, which of you that don't know that, the shanks go down in the middle of the row and in between the rows, which loosens up your soil nicely after your tractor has been driving on any other passes. And that helps the water infiltration, so it can take a lot of water before it starts moving off your field. And that's a basket roll at the back. So that thing is trying to push the lumps into your hill so you can get that freeze thaw action. This is our fall ridger. We put a Valmar on the back for our cover cropping. And we have these baskets on the back, custom made. They're actually not heavy enough to do the job that we want, so we're going to have to spring load them for next season. You can see in the second row there's a pretty big lump there. So that's not ideal for your freeze thaw through the winter. Sometimes the winter works out very nicely. It'll just rain and it'll freeze up and everything will work. Other winters it'll be dry and it won't quite work as well. There's another picture of our operation. That's an 8-row dammer diker. You can buy 6 and 8 rows. And with the way we have our baskets, they conform to the hill, so we actually have a little bit bigger hills. It's better for surface area, for heating up in the springtime, and for soil erosion, for the wind blowing in the fall, it's a little bit better with those deeper ridges. We feel, anyways. We had the four-wheel drive on there. If we have a tractor available that's a track machine or front-wheel assist, we find it works better because the crab steering moves our three-point hitch fall ridger around a little bit. It's not good for our shanks, and you get wiggles in the field. So the track machine works very nice for this operation, we find. This is one I pulled off the internet anyways, but this guy has a GPS set up on his, and he's got a pole-type fall ridger, so you can get your accuracy down a little bit closer. To keep the water in place, you put pockets. This is another option. If you have to run baskets or you run your dammer diker wheels, it's one or the other. I haven't seen systems that do both. So this guy, you can do it in the spring and in the fall. So if you have water, this will keep the water running from down your rows, and then obviously the ridges keep the water from running across your rows. So it's a pretty good system to keep the water in place on your field. Obviously, if you get too much water, it gets the capacity and it will still run. Sometimes in the spring or even in the fall, if we have a big rain event and it breaks all our little dikes there, we'll actually go in and re-dike again to try to keep the water where it lands on our field. This is corn and not potatoes, obviously, but once you hit capacity, this is going to happen anyways. But the idea is your field can handle a lot more rain before this does happen to you. So here's our seed truck and the Valmar in the back of our fall ridger. So we're set up to seed cover crops, and it took a while to get that system up and going. We weren't ready till September 29th this year. We would like to have a little more growth. That's what we're shooting for in the future. Our reason for cover cropping is keeping something growing on the soil at all times. You're essentially taking the sun's energy and putting it into the soil. You increase your organic matter with the exudates off the roots. Crop diversity is something we're working with a little bit more and more here all the time. So we have a 9-species cover crop, which I'll show you in the next couple slides, and that's to forward here. Another reason for cover cropping is sequester atmospheric nitrogen as well as the carbon to your soil. If you can get some flowering going, you get gains from your beneficial insects. There's a parasitic wasp and a ladybug eating aphids. If you build those up enough, hopefully you can reduce your sprays. So here's some diversity in the cover crop that we grew this year. This cover crop we planted after our potato field. It was late August. And I'll just scroll through a couple more of our cover crop operations here. You can see a little. We have tillage radish. Next slide shows it better. Some tillage radish, some purple turnips, forage brassica, forage collard, some oats, some barley, and some bursine clover, and some crimson clover, I believe is what we put in there. So, and the idea is if you just grow a monocrop, a lot of the diseases and insects that eat that crop, it's a smorgasbord for it, whereas you put some diversity in, the exudates off the roots help suppress diseases from one species to another. So that's some of the things we're working with. I worked with a fellow, or spoken to a fellow in Colorado, and he's actually going cover crop, a very diverse cover crop, 20-some species, and then his seed and fresh potatoes, and then a cover crop and seed fresh potatoes. And his disease levels are quite low, so we're going to keep working along and see if we can make any difference here. So there's our fall ridges this fall that we made again. On the left, this is our target growth on our cover crop. We'd like to be at least as much as that. It's just getting close to flowering our cover crop. That's the same one that I showed in the previous pictures, this field. And we grew a frost-tolerant cover crop, so it's good to about minus 10. But we didn't want a lot of overwintering species in there to give, so just in case we had some trouble in the spring. We're not terribly concerned because of our power hilling operation. Hopefully we can take care of all the trash, anything that does survive the winter. And then the chemistry will last from there as well. Last slide is we're farmers, and some of the things we're doing, we jump in with both feet. We need to take risks, so I thought I would show my son an early age it's time to take a risk. So thank you, and move on to any questions.
Thank you so much, Harold. We are going to start with the Q&A part of the webinar now. If you have any questions for Harold, please type them into the chat box now. We have a few in. Harold, can you recap why is the freeze-thaw action such an important factor here?
Well, with enough moisture so that you do get the freeze-thaw, it really mellows up your soil. And it can mellow up your compaction layers as well. So if you can keep that mellow soil, plant into that, then you're golden for the year, is what we find. I'm not sure if that answers the question.
No, that's great, absolutely. Can you reiterate how your soil has improved since your family implemented fall bedding 25 years ago?
I noticed in the magazine it said that they couldn't prove that you could get into your work on your soil sooner, but with the practice of fall bedding, we definitely do get into plant earlier each year, and we have noticed the increased yields as well. So those are two things. As far as making our soil healthier from fall ridging, I guess I think we do work it about the same amount as we normally would, so I haven't seen a lot of improved soil health from just the fall ridging, but it's the other things that we're implementing that's improving our soil. We also use about 12 tons, 8 to 12 ton of compost in our rotation, so that helps out lots for our nutrients and our biology in our soil. And one thing I did mention as well, even with those ridges there, our soil is prone to blowing, and we live in southern Alberta, so we get some nasty winds in the fall and the springtime. So when we put the cover crop on top, our plan is as well that our ridges can't blow. If you do get a very good freeze-thaw, which is good for reducing the clumps, it actually makes your soil a lot more prone to blowing in the springtime.
You're talking earlier a little bit about cover crops. Are some cover crops better than others, and if so, why is that?
I'm pretty new in the cover crop arena, but it depends what disease you want to suppress. Oats will suppress Sclerotinia, and certain brassicas will suppress other diseases and other crops. So the diversity in the cover crop seems to be, and I'm not sure what is the best mix of cover crops, but the people that I've spoken to that have been in it for a while, they like to put more species in all the time. So they're always putting in more different species. And gaining, you know, you got your legumes in there, and everything is doing a benefit to the soil. Sequestering the carbon to the soil is a big one, but the diversity helps with diseases.
Harold, was there a, a large cost involved to getting into fall bedding?
I can't remember exactly what our fall bedding machine is. It's not that terribly expensive. And that's really, I think, the only piece of equipment you need to start fall bedding. I think it's around, I shouldn't say, $70,000, depending if you buy a 6-row, 8-row.
Were there any agronomists or extension staff involved who helped you out with this?
You know, we started, it's been about 25 years since we started fall bedding, and as soon as we heard it, just made all the sense in the world, because we were rototilling ahead of our planter, so you don't know exactly where that tractor is driving. So once we found out that you're not going to be driving where your potatoes are growing, it was a no-brainer for us, and we just went that way. Not a lot of research or agronomy done on it, but and it's taken in southern Alberta, that's for sure.
You were talking earlier about the equipment that you use and whatnot. Is there any special equipment needed for this process? Maybe equipment that people often wouldn't think about needing?
For us, our power hiller, the fall bedding is a new piece of equipment. And you know, some people actually have marker bars that do something similar. And I know of other people that put their fall bedding, if their soil, they have sandy soil or it's pretty mellow, they actually drop their fall bedder right into a stubble field and make their hills. We're trying to work that way, but so far haven't got there. Was that the question, Mark?
Sure, yeah, absolutely. Now, I just want to be clear, Harold.
Well, yeah, okay, so I should say the power hiller is a... The amount of clods that we have on our farm, the power hiller really helps. It reduces a lot of the clods that we bring back to our storage. That's a pretty important one. And we have the hilling machine. I showed you the 12-row hilling machine. That puts down our fertilizer. So that's a pretty important piece of equipment for us, too. We put that phosphorus band in right by the seed piece, 2x2.
Right. Now, just to be clear, your fall ridging, then cover cropping, and in spring, you work down the cover crop with the power hiller?
Yes, that's correct. That's correct. We are still pretty new at this, so it depends how big that cover crop grows. We thought if it grows too big, we might actually have to go and shred it down in the fall, or we could actually use a power hiller at that time and work it down as well.
Now, how deep do you rip ahead of the power hiller and shaper? Can you repeat the order of the tillage implements?
I think lots of people have their own preferences, and it depends how good your deep tillage implement is. But before we go in with our deep ripper, we like to have, 4 to 6 inches of pretty mellow soil. So when you make your hills, there's actually wings on the shanks on that fall bedder, and those will push up the soil to make the hills. So if you have 4 to 6 inches of pretty nice mellow soil to make your hills, that works out really well. They do have a tendency to throw clumps, like lumps on top of your hills. That's where the basket roller comes in pretty handy. But so 6 inches of nice loose soil, if you can put your fall bedder right into that, that would probably work pretty good. We found out it doesn't always work for tractors working too hard to pull that fall bedder. It's nice if it has a pretty easy run, because you want to keep it as straight as possible as well. We're trying to be that sub-inch thing. If your fall bedder is working really hard, it tends to not work that well that way. I hope that answers the question.
Absolutely. You mentioned earlier a fish product that you made use of in this process. What is that fish product actually used for?
It's pretty good for the beneficial fungi in your soil. So since we're going over with that rig anyways, we have some land that we grow beside a feedlot, and it's manured soil. So our phos levels are extremely high. And since we're going over anyways, we decided to put some fish down. We usually put about 2 to 4 gallons of fish down. But that's, it's a biology food.
Do you have any recommendations for growers who are just wanting to get started in this?
I would say try a few fields as soon as you can, and when your comfort level is good, I think it makes pretty good sense. I can just speak from Southern Alberta. I'm not sure if it doesn't work well in some areas, but in Southern Alberta it works well, and I've seen it work in other areas as well. I would recommend just trying a couple circles and see how it goes.
Has the tillage radish provided a clear positive benefit here? And if so, how have you evaluated that?
You know, I haven't really evaluated it yet. I understand what the tillage radish does. It taps down quite deep. Our radishes this year didn't grow that terribly big. The bulb is about as big as my pinky finger, and my hands are pretty average size. So those can grow, you know, like a big russet on years where they get enough growth in. The idea is they penetrate down deep into the soil, and then there's pathways for the water and the biology to move up and down in your soil. And I haven't done any tests to see how that's working.
Are there any drawbacks or risks associated with this approach?
You know, I have heard people say in some areas it doesn't work that well. And I don't really know the reasons that it wouldn't work that well, because the biggest thing to me is not driving where your potatoes are growing.
No, that would definitely be...
If you can figure out how to make that work somehow, I think it would be beneficial.
What's the time commitment involved with fall bedding? When you're busy with harvesting other crops, how do you fit this in?
That's a good question. We actually have... it was a bit of a transition for us. We got too busy at one time, and we used to do it all after harvest, but we've actually dedicated 2 people to doing all our grain work and all our fall field work. So we are able, and that four-wheel drive tractor is available to do it. It's not ideal for our fall bedding, but we will use it when all the other tractors are busy digging potatoes. But we find out it sure pays. We have a couple of guys doing that in the fall, but it sure pays to not have to do all that work in the spring to prep our land for potato beds.
Right. Why do you make use of the track machine as opposed to row crop tire machines?
That's what we did earlier on in one of the pictures I was showing there. We basically thought, since the tractors are built to straddle four rows now, why don't we just get all our equipment to do that? It wasn't an easy sell with the equipment manufacturers, and it's still not you can't go and buy 8-row equipment anyways. You could buy 4-row equipment that straddles those four rows, but that's we just don't want that extra set of tires running down 2 of our rows, which does compact the soil. We did notice way back it went, even with the hills and stuff, that right under the tractor, before we switched to this method where there's no duals running, the water would absorb into the ground faster, like just watching our pivot go over. And the ones we ran our duals, the water would run a lot further down the road because we were watching a hill there. And then with all our tractor paths, when we took a dammer diker through there to put our dikes in the field afterwards, right in that middle row, everything was nice and mellow and there was no lumps. And wherever our duals were driving, even running a shank through there doesn't help. It's compacted. We had big, ugly lumps, and we were often quite concerned what it was going to end up being at harvest time. Usually they meld up a bit with the irrigation. But once we thought, well, why don't we get that in the 3 hills, in between the 3 rows or the 4 rows under our tractor? And that's, we did that. This is the first time we did it, was this year. We got our whole system. That cost us some money to switch over to that. But our yields were quite good. this year, and it was a pretty average year. We were pretty happy. Actually, we had a record russet yield on two of our fields, and we did haul the least amount of dirt that we ever did haul on our farm this year. So having that mellow bed under those tracks has worked quite well for us.
Earlier you mentioned soil warmth. Why would you say the soil warms quicker in the spring?
Well, with the fall beds, it warms up a little bit faster because it's just at the surface area. There's just that much more surface area for the sun to hit. We'd actually tried a field not too long ago. We paratilled it and left it for the winter, and we went back in and just went to Power Hill straight into the paratilled ground. And it was a little bit wetter. That year was wetter, and it took us a little bit longer to get in there. And our power hiller had to work a lot harder to get through that flat ground versus the fall-ridged ground.
Can you actually see a difference in insect pressure due to conservation of beneficial insects, or is that just a hypothetical benefit at this point?
I haven't personally seen it, and we did grow a couple crops out at the Fincastle farm that did flower, but we're going to grow potatoes next year, so we'll be able to see next year what's going on. The fellow from Colorado that I worked with, he saw that even in a greenhouse. He said he showed the scientists what he could do in his greenhouse to reduce the insect pressure in there. He was growing some flowering plants with what else he had going on in there. And the research center tried it, but they just put one flowering plant in the whole greenhouse, and they said it didn't work. So he went back and he put in a bunch of different plants, and sure enough, it reduced the pressure, the insect pressure in the greenhouse. So I'm just going by word of mouth of his experience.
Have you tried just power hilling in the fall?
You know, we have not tried that. No, we have not tried that. We did think, like I mentioned earlier, if we did the fall beds and our cover crop got too big, that we could just go in and power hill that, and then we should have enough trash that it shouldn't blow, and then it should be good for planting in the spring. So we have thought about using it for that purpose, but we haven't just straight power hilled. After they plant, they actually go in with a power hiller again, and that seems to set up the hills a little bit better. We have that Sputnik hilling machine there, and that kind of pushes the loose dirt. When you actually power hill it to make your hills after you plant it, they said it sets up and it doesn't slough off as much with the rains and the irrigation.
Well, that's all we have time for today. I want to thank Harold for making time in his busy schedule to share his insight and expertise with us on this topic. I hope that everyone has found this information valuable. And again, I'd like to pass on a very big thank you to our sponsor, McCain Foods, for its support. I also want to quickly thank Caleb McDonald and Teresa Kurjewitz, our team working behind the scenes, for their dedication to making this a successful and informative event. This presentation will be made available online at spudsmart.com within 24 hours as well, so you can listen to it at any time. Thanks for your attention, and on behalf of the team here at SpudSmart, we hope you have a great rest of your day.